This is Karen Lyle of Salesport Talk in San Francisco, and I'm here with Chief Warrant Officer Leo Zappawa with a message from the U.S. Coast Guard about ocean safety.
The Coast Guard is just one piece of a greater effort, valued partnerships, and I'd like to take a little bit of time to recognize the hardworking folks that the Coast Guard works with every day at the city, county, state levels in California, and of course, our federal partners. And I understand that during these difficult times with regards to COVID, a lot of folks are maintaining their mental wellness through exercise. And the majesty and the power of the ocean are oftentimes inviting places to go and see and be socially distant. Unfortunately, with these larger waves we're experiencing along the California coast, it can also be very easy to become complacent and not pay attention to what are commonly known as sneaker waves, or waves of higher magnitude that are infrequent and unexpected at a coastal area. All of us who have enjoyed time near our beautiful area beaches and seashore will see posted signs placed by local officials and when the weather is expected to be adverse. And I would ask your listeners to heed those warnings and take them very seriously. Anytime folks go out in the ocean, we encourage folks to always wear a Coast Guard-approved life jacket. The ones that are orange with retroreflective tape make it a lot easier for folks who are doing the rescuing to locate those people in distress. Unfortunately, we have also had some tragic search and rescue cases occur along the California coast. Most notably were the two search and rescue cases that occurred on the 10th of January at Pescadero Beach State Park and at Point Bonita, and a third that occurred on January 3rd at Blind Beach north of Bodega Bay. In total, five lives were lost in these cases. Very tragic. And in all of those cases, those aforementioned sneaker waves overwhelmed the folks on the beach and took them out to sea. And as we all know, anyone who's dipped a toe in the ocean here, it's very cold. It's only about 53 degrees, the water temperature. So it's very easy to go into cold water shock and end up drowning, especially in such a turbulent environment. The ocean this time of year almost looks like a washing machine. And although it's very beautiful to view, it's also very dangerous. I want to really convey to your listeners that although the ocean is beautiful on any day when the seas are high, folks should respect how mighty the ocean truly is. Never turn their back on the ocean when enjoying the beach or seashore on foot. If you're going out on the water, either on a surfboard, a sailboat, or powerboat, dress for that cold water environment and wear a life jacket at all times. I always recommend a Type 1, as they're designed to turn most people, even if they're unconscious, face up in the water. Finally, the Coast Guard is always hiring young men and women, and I can think of few organizations with such a rich tapestry of storied histories. 230 years of service to our nation. We in the Coast Guard truly live the service motto of Semper Paratus, or always ready. I joined in 1996 and planned on only doing 4 years, and now in the blink of an eye, it's been 25.
All right, thanks for that, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast, around the world on American Forces Radio Network. It is Tuesday at 9:40. We check in with our friends at SalesportTalk.com, and as per usual, our friend Karen Lyle is with us, and she co-hosts this segment with me, too. Karen, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, actually. Rick, I'm here in the studio. Where are you?
You always love to out me when I'm not there.
Well, it's I come over and I want that big hug and, you know.
Well, you can check with me if I'm going to be there.
That's right.
I have to go to a press conference at 11.
Oh, we'll forgive you. We'll forgive you for the press. We have to honor the other press.
We have Eric Silberger and Jonah Kim as well. Jonah, we'll get to him in a second. Eric is with us, and Eric is... plays the violin, and he also is a prolific snorkeler as well. Eric, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Oh, well, I'm a fourth-generation violinist, travel around the world regularly, and constantly am seeing water in different parts of the world. I have something especially for volcanoes. I've played inside a volcano. I'm probably the only violinist that's ever performed inside one. But I just love seeing all the beautiful nature out there.
No, I have to ask you
all
about
right.
the volcano.
Wait.
No, you want to do it? It's your turn?
Oh, no. I was going to ask the exact same thing.
Okay.
You are, so go
I
ahead.
Will ask the question for Rick and I both. Tell us about the volcano. Where was it? And I'm assuming it wasn't active.
Yeah, it's one of the only ones that the magma flowed out of. So actually, it's very freezing cold. It was really rather chilly. And it was in Iceland, a volcano called Drunukagigur. I'm butchering my Icelandic, but it was quite a journey to get there. You had to travel about an hour by car and then hike about an hour from there. And initially, I had to learn how to drive manual on the way trying to get there. So that was also another journey that same day.
Was that a four-wheel drive?
It was a Jeep, yeah.
Yeah, I would think it would be. It was a rocky road, not off-road. Off-road driving, I'm imagining.
It was quite a journey. And the other part of it was just when you finally got up there, it's one of the first times I felt really this natural beauty and presence, because the colors were just so exotic, amazing. The colors, when you saw the light all of a sudden in the inside of the cavern of the volcano, you could see all these different colors of red and orange. And it was something I just think about very fondly as one of the only times in my life I felt truly 100% present for just a longer, very long period of time when I was there, which wasn't that long, but felt that way.
How are the natural acoustics in there?
Actually, some of the best I've ever heard. I played, and somebody actually was talking about when they came down, because you were actually going from the peak, and they had this very amazing way of lowering you down, and actually it was kind of haphazard almost, where they had to push against the side of the volcano just so you didn't hit your head. So we were wearing helmets and wearing all these things to stay dry, because there was also a little bit of rain from part of the cavern that was going down. So I didn't bring my regular violin, which is from 1757.
I would think not.
Yeah. So, but it was something where people said they felt it was like spine tingling going down. And it felt that way inside too. One of the best acoustics I've ever seen.
So you were inside the volcano. You went into the cavern of the volcano. How deep did you go?
It must have been 60 feet or something. It took a little bit of time to get down, actually. And I just think about the people that discovered it, and how do they lower themselves down with the rope? It's quite amazing. They just probably had some helmet lights and just were going to explore the unknown.
So, Jonah, not to be outdone, where have you done your cello in a perilous situation?
Oh, gosh. I try to avoid perilous situations at all costs. But one of the most, daunting cello playing experiences of my life was, concert halls are a certain size, and even the largest halls, they cap out at about 10,000, I would say. And I was playing the national anthem at a ball game. Mm. And this was, I had done this as a kid, I think, but then it had been 20 years since I did it in front of a crowd quite that size. And so, you think of these singers singing the anthem and sometimes they forget the lyrics. I completely understand now. And so after da 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 da, I could not remember what came next. And for me, that next moment felt like an eternity in mm-hmm. purgatory. It was just like, hang time. But I watched the video and there is no extra time. It was just all in my head.
Wow. Well, I have sung the national anthem at a professional game, and that's the panic moment, because they will boo you, and you deserve to be booed if you ruin the anthem, right?
Exactly.
So, where did you sing that, Rick? I was just going to ask you, because I know you've been in front of those audiences at the ball games more than once.
I sang it in the Pioneer League, actually, in Idaho Falls, for a crowd of about 3,000 on a Father's Day, and so. Not spine shingling, but I was in a place where if I got one note wrong, they would probably run me out of town. Well, can I also beseech you, we're with Eric Silberger and Jonah Kim, and I know that you have your instruments. Can we have like about a half minute or so of some, what do I call it, chamber music? Do you have something planned?
Well, actually, before we start with this little musical piece, I want to talk about the Thanksgiving weekend, because everybody was hopefully enjoying the Thanksgiving weekend and having an interesting time with family and friends, I'm sure. And we were doing music. Actually, I was the one listening, and Jonah and Eric were performing at the first incarnation of the San Francisco Music Festival and also the Carneros Classic. So we were in Napa, up in the wine country, with some wine and cheese and beautiful, beautiful quintet playing Schubert. And then we were in San Francisco. What was the name of the church that we were at?
Our hosts were the Swedenborgian Church of San Francisco.
historic building, just amazing acoustics inside, very, very beautiful. And then also at Ifshin's listening room in El Cerrito. So we're actually listening to an excerpt that's about 40 seconds long from that quintet performance that was just yesterday or the day before, I think, right? And we want more. You know, Eric, you have done musical performances for fundraisers, as has Jonah and all of the performers in the quintet, the Carneros Classic Quintet. But you've especially done fundraising for coral reefs in Hawaii, and you've been snorkeling there as well. We were talking a little bit about this before the show. Tell us about your snorkel experience in Maui and what you saw and what the water temperature was, and were there a lot of waves? Was it still?
So Hawaii has really amazing variety in terms of the water and different sides of different islands. So for instance, in Oahu or the Big Island or Maui. In Maui, I found it was a little bit more calm water. And I was on a particular beach in this particular case, my first time snorkeling. This is many years ago. And I saw in my first few moments, you know, I was just looking down and I was like, wow, there's a lot of different wildlife, aquatic life out here. And then all of a sudden I almost choked on the water because I let out all this air because I saw this giant sea turtle that just was right underneath of me. And it moved so fast, I didn't even know what it was until a second after it passed me. And then I looked again a second later and the sea turtle was just swimming away very fast. And it was so large. I felt like it was bigger than me, but I'm sure it was probably a little bit smaller, but it was just quite something to see.
I have to ask you too, Eric. You mentioned your violin from the 1700s. May it have been made by Antonio Stradivari?
No, actually, I've played on many of his instruments, but this one is by J.B. Guadagnini. It was made in Milan, Italy in 1757.
Wow.
And it's a violin I've really loved playing on. It's one of those violins that when you look at Stradivari, usually it's Stradivari and Guarneri del Gesù, some of the most famous makers. And then Guadagnini is probably the next name or two after that. But there's also so many great instruments being made today, and we're in a renaissance of instruments. So I'm also very interested in exploring that, as I know Jonah is as well.
And Jonah, your cello, Stella, is made by a maker that you actually know, and that's where you performed over in El Cerrito. Tell us a little bit about Stella.
So Stella is a very interesting kind of phenomenon that probably, you know, wasn't even intended to exist in the way that she does. But I consider this maker, Haida Lynn, based out of Ifshin's in El Cerrito, to be kind of like a American Stradivarius, if you will. His instruments are doing things that other new instruments are not doing or haven't ever been able to do. The volume, the quality of sound, and even the way the sound carries in a room, it mimics an older instrument. And the quality of sound, it's like there's pores in the sound that you get with older instruments that you don't see with a lot of these newer instruments. You get a very kind of plasticky, rubbery surface to the tone. And this may sound like I'm on drugs to some of you, but I promise I'm perfectly sober when I'm listening to the sound, and I do hear kind of like an earthy, grainy texture with the older instruments, and more of just like a glassiness or a lack of grains to the sound. So this quality is really hard to find, and just this kind of massive volume is, and he's such a generous man. He actually, when I was playing on a very old Italian instrument by Niccolo Amati. And when I no longer had access to this instrument, he actually gifted me a cello that I could play on as long as I needed. So that his generosity in that time and just his grace, his just looking out for this kid, it saved my life in many ways.
Wow.
Unbelievable stuff. And Karen, we have about a minute. You have one more question?
Oh, I just wanted to say when we were in the winery, what was the name? Was it Carneros? Is that what the name of the
winery? So the region is Carneros, mm-hmm. Carneros Classic. But the winery was Sainsbury. And we had our good friends there, Tim, Rory, Virginia, and many others that just we worked with, and we had a family connection with the vineyard as well. So one of my best friends, his brother actually lives out in Napa, just minutes drive from there.
A famous author.
Yeah, famous author. His name is Saul Lelchuk. And it was just, it felt like warm family the entire gathering, the entire way through.
And speaking of those wonderful tones, having all of you perform in the room with the barrels of wine and all the ways in which the sound folded in and skipped about and came in and out of that, you know, and actually after having tasted everything, it was pretty amazing experience. Really
great stuff from our guests, Eric Silberger and Jonah Kim and Karen Lyle. Find out more at salesporttalk.com. Thank you, you three, for coming in. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. So next week, I'm going to be on my way to London, and you'll have Patty.